It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I actually didn't think this program was going to happen. You know, I mentioned toward the end of the program last night that I had to have repairs done. It was supposed to be recall warranty covered work. And so we had to be out of here at a crazy hour this morning to get down, because get down all the way down to the other, the western side of Charleston, West Virginia, so as to get there early enough to get all the work done, because it was several hours of labor. So we've been up, you know, been up since about 6 a.m. Sparrows fart, as they say. Choked down a couple of cups of decaf and went howling down the mountain. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Just the adventures in being an everyday, ordinary, workaday, struggling American. Got down there, and it was really nice. The dealership actually had a loaner for us, because they said it's going to be several hours. And I said, well, we got some errands we could take care of. And toddled off, and a little bit later got a call from the shop, and they said, well, you know, it's not, we're gonna do those lower control arm recalls, and we're gonna do the firmware upgrade that was a recall. And by the way, you need tie rods and a transfer case. And well, shucks, that's only going to set you back $1,500. At which point, all the blood drained out of my face. And then it took the rest of the day to get it done. So there you have it. And we left, the work got done a little after 4. We left Charleston about 4:30, and bobbed and wove through traffic. Bobbed, see what I did there? Hi, yeah, don't try this at home. And came, I actually got in the door about 6 minutes before 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And then, for some reason or another, the streaming interfaces didn't want to cooperate, so that ate up a little bit of time. And wound up getting on air, what, about 6:03, 6:04 p.m.? So that's where everything stands for this, the third day of May 2018, the third day of May. And this program is, surprisingly enough, live. Silent R. Lamar says, what did you use to get back up the mountain? Well, the repaired automobile, which we hope stays repaired. At one point, and I'm not sure, that you want to hope that they're honest, but you really have no way of knowing. And you'd like to hope that you're not being merely subjected to a radical cachectomy because, you know, you're available. But they said, oh, you know, well, we're gonna have to check the flange plate and see how it's interacting with the Knutton valve, and doggone it, you may need a new transmission. At which point I said, then I'm walking home. And so they decided I didn't need a new transmission. But I still had to have the transfer case. Yeah, it's been a very, very, very stressful day up here on Mount Colby Gone. But you know what? We've got a merry little band gathered in the chat room. HeadOn.live is where we live. If you'd like to be part of the madcap, merry, zany, multimedia, wacky, real-time conversation that takes place in the hours in which this program is live, you're welcome to go on by HeadOn.live and click on the chat room link, and zounds, you'll be right there. And pick out a screen name and a password. You'll be part of the aforementioned merry, madcap, zany, wacky, real-time, multimedia extravaganza, where you will be greeted by Anatole and Silent R. Lamar and Scott and more, who will probably wander by once they figure out that this program is actually live. Also, you will be moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become man cave in the conversation as well. So that's where we find ourselves this evening. We always have thanks to send out at the beginning of the program. Absolutely. Thanks going out to Paul. Thank you to Paul for your help. That means we've only got $190 more dollars to raise this evening. And along the way, we also have subscribers to thank, five of them. Thank you very kindly to Renee in D.C. Thank you, Renee. Partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to Stephen in California, surreptitious member of the Fraternity of Steves. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very much indeed to Janice in Wisconsin. And thanks very much to John in Indiana, Talibandiana. Thank you, John. And thank you very kindly to News Ninja Gene and Ann across the pond in merry oldie England. Thank you all very kindly for being part of the overnight crew, the subscription group, the Set It and Forget It bunch. If you'd like to be a member of the subscription group, the Set It and Forget It bunch, well, you'd be joining in with the aforementioned if you signed up for a subscription on this day, the 3rd. Or if you want to use Patreon, there's a Patreon button over at HeadOn.live. And you can be part of that group, and I will. The transfer will be completed tomorrow, so that I will dutifully thank all the Patreon subscribers when that happens. So, thank you very, very kindly indeed, one and all. And like I said, we got $190 to raise this evening, and after what happened this afternoon, well, today. It becomes absolutely critical to meet the fundraising goal each and every day because, you know, didn't just have that laying around. So thank you very kindly in advance. Hopefully we'll knock down the fundraising goal for the evening. Where to go this evening? Well, of course, you know, the madness begins. I mean, there's really no seam to the news cycle anymore. It just all rolls together, and what you thought if you do this sort of work. What you thought you might have been talking about the next night, for instance, I had said last night at the end of the program that this being Thorn in the Side Thursday, we might probably need to be spending some time addressing the issue of Kanye West. Now for me, the idea of devoting any time on this program to the likes of Kanye West is deeply disturbing and annoying. Aggravating, and feels very much like a giant howling waste of time. But in this particular instance, I think it's warranted. He got the big ball of shit rolling to turn into a shitvalanche, a shavalanche. Last week, when he decided to start making nicey and more or less declared himself to be a maggot. But then he doubled down. He did. And of course, Kanye has a bit of a history, because way back when George W. Bush, Raisin Brain, as our friend Malloy calls him, back when he was playing an upside-down guitar while New Orleans drowned under the combined waters of a failed canal and Hurricane Katrina. Well, Kanye West said, George Bush doesn't like black people. And that kind of got some notoriety for Kanye, because it felt like he was, whether he realized it or not, speaking truth to power. Well, I guess that Kanye is gone. And has been replaced by maggot Kanye. Morons are governing America, Trumpansy, scum, maggots. But it was... It's not his maggot behavior, or his, well, to steal a title from Parliament Funkadelic, it's not his maggot brain. Of course, they spelled it M-A-G-G-O-T, but it works very well, M-A-G-A-T. It's not the gee, I love Trump part that is so distressing. It's his absolutely ahistorical remarks in an interview with TMZ about slavery. And the whole thing has turned into a carnival sideshow with various and sundry artistes opining on whether or not he was right or wrong for saying something that was 200 proof, bottled in bond, guaranteed. 99.99999% pure stupid. And I mean so stupid that if you were sitting across from him, you'd have to look at him and go, damn, man, you're stupid. Dumber than dirt. So stupid you couldn't pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. Too stupid to come in out of the rain. And lots of other references that we have here in the hills and hollers of Almost Level West by Cold Trump Genius Stan. One of my particular favorites being, if his brains was gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and drive it halfway around a BB. Stupid. And the source of all of this stupid is a remark, again, about slavery. And if you... if you go and you try to look up the story, what you find out now is the after effect. For instance, Adidas, the sportswear company and shoe company and makers of warm-up clothing and soccer uniforms and what have you, well, they've declared, after there was a call for a boycott of anybody having anything to do with Kanye West, Adidas said that, well, he was too important to their brand for them to dump him, as they probably should. The source of all this, and I know, if you send me emails saying, I don't care about Kanye, neither do I. But I care, look, I don't care if it's a fucking Klansman who says what Kanye said, or if it's Kanye. It's not the who, it's the what, it's the words. He sat down with TMZ Live and opened his mouth and just poured out a steady stream of, again, what's that word? Stupid. Stating a couple of days ago that slavery, bond slavery, human chattel, was a choice. Now, in the same visit to the TMZ newsroom, he said, I just love Trump. That's my boy. So many rappers used to love Trump, but then he get into office, and now they don't love him. Trump is one of rap's favorite people. Well, okay, I don't have the expertise to judge that as true or false. But then he said the following. These are quotes. When you hear about slavery for 400 years, for 400 years, he said, question mark, that sounds like a choice. Like, you were there for 400 years, and it's all you all? It's like we're mentally imprisoned. I like the word imprisoned because slavery goes too directly to the idea of blacks. So prison is something that unites us as one race, blacks and whites being one race, that we're the human race. Okay, groovy. He got to that. Everybody's, you know, what's the motto of Berea College down in Kentucky? It's a verse from one of the letters of St. Paul, I think. We are all of one blood, something like that. All the world is of one blood. Whatever. But this idea... And again, you can see why I said what I said. The idea that slavery was a choice. I mean, man, that's not misguided. That's not a difference of opinion. That's stupid. And, you know, I hesitate to use words like that in circumstances like this. But I can't find another one that works. Besides, stupid. I mean, a 10-second Google search or any other search engine will demonstrate that slavery was not a choice. That's why there were slave patrols, boys and girls. That's why President Andrew Jackson put a bounty on a runaway slave in a Nashville, Tennessee newspaper, offering extra money to anyone who caught his runaway slave and would give him a sound beating, but not too hard. Something like no more than 30 lashes or 100 or, you know, some arbitrary number, because when you get right down to it, one lash is a sojourn in hell. And by the time you get to 30 and you cross up toward 50, and it, you know, we're talking about people passing out from shock, trauma, blood loss, horror. Randy in PA says, "No, Bob, that's malicious." Well, I'm not sure just which part is malicious, but it sure does seem to be willfully ignorant. Marty pointing out, Kanye West making Kim Kardashian seem like the smart one, except that, you know, she married him. Well, you're never going to impress me with the genius of the Kardashians anyway. You know, they're famous for being famous. I mean, it's kind of a feedback loop. Scott and Punky with a note. Slavery is a choice in the same sense as rape is a blind date. Oh, by the way, since it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, Bill Cosby's wife today compared, and I don't mean as in, well, you know, he sure had it worse, but at least my husband's only going to prison. No, I don't mean like that. Bill Cosby's wife analogized her husband, convicted of sexual assault, of drugging women, and raping them. She analogized Bill Cosby. You know, there's nothing funny about this, but I think maybe the hockey puck warning should probably be in effect with about a half a roll of duct tape for this. She analogized Bill Cosby's conviction for rape, and which included and was apparently very important to the jury in the case, his own confessions of giving women quaaludes in a sworn deposition testimony that he gave. She analogized Bill Cosby to, oh, just say it, Emmett Till. Now, by the time we'd gotten down to South Charleston today and gotten the whole process of the repairs started, you know, I had time to sit and scan the news as it was rolling across my little pocket device that I can't do without. And there it was. Bill Cosby's wife compares Bill Cosby to Emmett Till. Emmett Till, you might recall, and I probably don't even have to do this, but just in case. Emmett Till was a 15-year-old young black man from Chicago, who was visiting relatives in Mississippi when a white woman declared that he had made a pass at her down at a general store. Well, based upon this affront to delicate white southern feminine womanhood, the local Klan chapter got together and passed a motion and went out and kidnapped Emmett Till, beat him unrecognizable, and wrapped him in chains and used an old cotton gin fan to attempt to submerge him in the river. Honestly, I can't remember which river. Was it the Pearl, the Tallahatchie? And to this day, you can go online because and see what the Klan, what the white folks did to Emmett Till. Because his mother, when she got his body back to Chicago, she insisted on having an open casket funeral, saying, "I want the world to see what they did to my boy." And what they did to her boy was abominable, unspeakable. It was the kind of thing one would expect to see from Nazis. And, you know, the Klan's not that far from them. Another fascist organization. The only way you can make any sense out of what Kanye West said, that slavery is a choice, is if, as Silent R. Lamar has pointed out, yeah, slavery is a choice of a white man. Just call it a certain choice of a few white men over the course of about... Well, the end. If you start with the arrival of Europeans in the New World, 1492, they started trying to enslave the natives. No sooner than they got here, they found out that the natives didn't enslave real well. People like Cortez discovered that, and Pizarro, De Soto, but primarily Cortez and his coterie. And so, between the Spanish and the Portuguese, they began importing captured, enslaved Africans to the New World to work for them for free, forever, for life. No chance for parole or freedom. The Spanish did it, the Portuguese did it, then the Dutch, ever the businessmen, decided to get in on the action. And the English said, "Us too." And in point of fact, something I discovered a couple of weeks ago, I think I mentioned it on air, the ship that delivered one of my ancestors to the Massachusetts Bay Colony, prior to beginning its history of running white religious maniacs from England to the New World, had been a slave ship. Had been one of those ships making what is known as the Middle Passage, in which all of those Africans who were slaves by choice, according to Kanye West, had to be kept chained head to foot in the hold of the ship for 6 to 8 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks, for the aforesaid Middle Passage, during which time many of them died of disease, starvation, dehydration, and in some cases, outright suicide. And that's the reality that Kanye West jumped into with his bold and manifest ignorance. Now maybe, and I acknowledge this as a possibility, maybe I, as a white man, just absolutely shiny with white privilege, white male privilege, maybe I ought to keep my mouth shut on this and say, you know, we'll leave it to the black community to sort this out. But that strikes me as somewhat unfair. Not to me, but to Kanye. And to anybody who might be inclined to support that position. Because one would like for history to be colorblind, but we know that it is not. And anything that takes away from the 400-year horror that was slavery. Because the various nations of the New World got rid of slavery at different dates and different times. We're not just talking about the sickness of the United States, but a manifest sickness of white European colonialists generally, whether it be Mexico or Peru or Chile, Argentina or Brazil or other countries. Terrace, by the way, offers up an observation. I heard and saw Kanye say, quote unquote, his truth on TMZ while declaring himself a free thinker. Since I've been reading Kurt Anderson's Fantasyland, Kanye sounds like every other intellectually lazy Christian bigot from America's shameful history. Maybe it's marketing. Maybe this is a way to get maggots to buy his recordings. I don't know. I mean, I like that. All right, okay, time to use a cranky old white guy voice. I like that one song he did where he sampled some Ray Charles music. But the thing is, what I liked about that song was the sample of the Ray Charles music. Steve, in New York, subject line Cosby as Emmett Till, says, now that's stupid. Or is it dumb, dim-witted, or maybe there just isn't a word to describe that level of gall? Or, oh, I don't know, can we borrow a handy word from another language? Is that some of the hutziest chutzpah that you've ever heard? Now, for your consideration, Brother Deacon Asa offers up something. He says, compare and contrast Kanye's recent comments to his slavery-related lyrics. It's bizarre. Here's the lyric. My mama was raised in the era when clean water was only served to the fairer skin. Doing clothes, you would have thought I had help, but they wasn't satisfied unless I picked the cotton myself. You see, it's broke nigga racism that don't touch anything in the store, and this rich nigga racism, that's that come in please buy more. What you want, a Bentley, fur coat, a diamond chain? All you blacks want all the same things. Used to only be niggas, now everybody playing, spending everything on Alexander Wang, new slaves. Okay, so you can actually do an analysis of that, and you can talk about that. You can see that maybe there's a through line back to the, okay, this is going to be weird. Back to the Stones. And can't get no satisfaction. And the consumerism that they eviscerate in that song. And, of course, the entirety of the Stones was based upon their appropriation of a classic American, African-American musical art form, to wit, the blues. And you can argue that material culture, as this lyric appears to do, material culture enslaves people. This, however, has not stopped Kanye from buying all that and obtaining all that and displaying all that stuff. But there is a larger problem, and I think this is where this is where substantive analysis comes in. Because you see, when Kanye said slavery was a choice, he wasn't just saying that by himself. He was actually echoing neo-Nazi and Klan white wing Trumpansy maggot talking points. Because all you have to do is spend a little time in the internet sewers of the white wing, and you'll find something decidedly similar. Arguments that, for instance, Muslims started slavery by selling slaves to the white colonialists in coastal African communities where at first the Portuguese landed. But that's a bit disingenuous, because the Portuguese were the ones who wanted the slaves, and the Muslim traders were responding to a need as made clear by the Portuguese slave hunters. There were Muslims involved, there were animists involved. The Portuguese were, of course, come on, I know you know, Christians, followers of the true faith, y'all. And they fell back on things like Paul's admonition, slaves, obey your masters, as the church obeys Christ. Yeah, we won't delve deeply into that. There were political reasons that Paul said that. He was trying to show to the powers that be that Christianity was not a danger to Imperial Rome, because the shit was about to seriously hit the fan in Palestine, because a new Messiah cropped up every other day, and most of them weren't all lovey-dovey and kumbaya singing like, you know, Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life. Some of them were quite violent. But there is a line of, well, if you can call it thought, in what is sometimes referred to as the alt-right, or white nationalists. I prefer Nazis, Klansmen, bigots, racists. It seems so much simpler and more accurate. So that, one, he's getting huge huzzas not from the maggots, not just for saying nice things about Geezer Disgustus, but because he is providing them with some of the richest, most delicious, most wonderful, most satisfying confirmation bias that they have come across in eons. It's one thing to have a bunch of Brooks Brothers polo shirt wearing tiki torch carrying neo-Nazi young men marching through Charlottesville shrieking, "You will not replace us." But man, oh man, oh man. If you can get somebody from the African American community to parrot your ahistorical denialist bullshit, you have hit, you know, as a Nazi, as a Klansman, you've hit the mother lode. You know, several years back, Dave Chappelle had a sketch he did about the black Klansman, the blind black Klansman who did not know he was black and was racist as hell. And it was uncomfortable, but it was uncomfortably funny. Well, now, reality has exceeded by a wide margin the absurd ridiculousness of Dave Chappelle's sketch. And Kanye West knew what he was doing. Because, among other things, he came up with a bullshit quote from Harriet Tubman and tweeted it yesterday, claiming that Harriet Tubman said, "I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more if only they knew they were slaves." And so we must at least acknowledge for the time being that there is a certain reality. There's no such thing as bad publicity. That he'll be able, eventually, he'll be able to put Kim in a new Bentley because of all of this. Because when one of his endorsers, namely Adidas, says, no, we're sorry, we don't care what he says about slavery. I mean, he can say it didn't exist for all we care. He's too important to the brand. Yeah. And yes, he's got a new album out. That is a cynical approach. But the fact remains that just as Phil Duck Doofus Robertson said a few years ago, "I wish they'd tell the story about the happy slaves. Wasn't all the slaves miserable? Some of them was just happy, singing their little slave songs out there in the sugar cane patch and the cotton patch, just chopping sugar cane and chopping cotton and just happy as could be." I'm guessing nobody has ever made Phil Robertson, or Kanye for that matter, stand out in the blazing sun of late July and early August down in the Delta. Because, you know, it's one thing to be able to walk out, walk around a little bit. Hoo-wee! Sure is hot out here. I think I'm going to go up on the porch and get me an ice-cold glass of lemonade. Maybe a little sweet tea. Maybe I'll mix them together for one of them all Arnold Palmer thingies. It is another thing entirely to begin on one of those long, long, long days to be getting up a little before sunrise and not be getting back to whatever passes for your home until after the sun has set, and to stand there hour after hour, day after day, week after week, under that blazing sun. Well, several summers back, I had the opportunity to be down in Dallas County, Alabama, in the Selma area. And having grown up in North Alabama, I knew some of that heat. But when you move further south, down into what's referred to geographically in Alabama as the Black Belt, as a reference to its soil, it's a different kind of hot. It's a kind of hot where even the air feels like it's too drained of energy to even provide the life-giving essence that is air to creatures who breathe. Where it can become so still as to make one think that one is not among the living anymore. And if you spend too much time in that heat, you won't be among the living anymore. But there is a cottage industry. In the White Wing, among the neo-Nazis and the Klansmen et al., of doing a near complete and total rewrite of the antebellum South, including slavery. Some of them you may have heard and may not realize necessarily what you are hearing. One of them comes across as somewhat seemingly innocuous. The idea that not all slaves were black, which is often followed by a reference to indentured Irish and Scottish servitude. But there is scholarship for that that utterly refutes that wholly and entirely false comparison. It's also from the same school of thought that has sort of adopted and repurposed Norse mythology as some sort of pure white Aryan religion. Neo-Nazis and Klansmen love them some Norse symbology. But this country is rife with those sorts of historical rewrites. Think, for instance, of Birth of a Nation, based upon a book called The Klansman, in which the Klansman is the hero. Woodrow Wilson, when he was president of the United States, and before he was, I think I've got the timeline right, before he was felled by that stroke, had it screened for him personally in the White House. And Woodrow Wilson, while he had been president of Princeton University, was in fact, first and foremost, a proud son of old Virginia. And he just loved Birth of a Nation, which is just one long exercise in unmitigated racism. And you've got to understand that even at the time it was made, they knew it was racist. It's not one of those things where you watch Birth of a Nation and say, well, you know, that's just how they thought back then. We can't hold them to the same standards we'd apply to ourselves today. Bullshit! They knew it was a racist narrative, and it was made to be a racist narrative. Think about, Miss Scarlet being laced into her corset before the barbecue over to 12 Oaks and sitting there worrying about Ashley. And how Mammy took care of her and the idea that that created of some sort of peaceful coexistence. Or Lord knows, Butterfly McQueen in the same movie, who was portrayed as sort of helpless. Miss Scarlet, I don't know nothing about birth and no babies. Didn't Miss Scarlet just slap the daylights out of her then? Because, you know, you can do that to somebody you own. And it creeps in all over the place. The Disney movie, Song of the South. Racist as hell. And then there's the entire film industry, which was racist as hell. And there were books that never made it to film that talked about the happy relationships between white folks and their happy slaves. But the thing is, for all of this bullshit revisionism, there are, if you will bother to go and find them, and most people won't, especially not the people who want this narrative to be... Look, you let these people have their way, and in another 100 years or less, slavery will have disappeared as a historical fact. It will certainly not be America's original sin. I think about William Seward, Abraham Lincoln's Secretary of State. Before he was that, he was a New York politician, and he had friends in the South, and he and his wife set off by carriage to visit those friends in the South. This is before the Civil War. And William Seward and his wife couldn't even get through Virginia before they were so sickened by the appalling conditions imposed by slavery that they turned around and went home. And they went home convinced that the United States of America was utterly doomed if the institution was allowed to continue. There's the letter from a former slave, written from the state of Ohio to his former master, who had asked him to come back to the plantation. And then there's simple math. And with that simple math, you can find the reason for the white terror at the idea of reparations. If you took the slave population of the United States, projected their progeny into the present, and accepted that progeny are, in the words of the law, the heirs, successors, and assigns forever of the holders of the right, and you established some sort of minimum wage for every slave in the United States for all the hours of work that they did. And if you then considered that those wages were not paid, that they were unfairly withheld, and if you then applied the miracle of compounded post-judgment interest, and if you treat April 1865 as the judgment, the United States of America could not print enough money to compensate the heirs, successors, and assigns of those laborers whose work was stolen. If you burned up the printing presses at the mint trying to do it. "40 acres and a mule, my ass." We're talking about instant millionaires. For every descendant of every slave. And the mere word reparations drives white wingers into paroxysms of fury and absolute unreason. Well, I ain't never owned no slave. Why they think they gotta get money? Thereby turning the entire inquiry on their ear. All right, Cletus. Let's have you work for free for the rest of your natural born days. See how you like it. And then see if... Yeah, I know. Some of the Cletai collective work in right-to-work states, so they take it anyway, but they're still getting paid. But the reality of slavery is there for anybody who cares to look for it. And you don't have to look too hard. Good God, just doing an image search alone, just looking at the photos from the era, will fill your mind with visions of the worst kinds of horrors. You know, we've featured them on this program, the stories that crop up every so often about a school district here or a school district there or a school here or a school there that finds itself at the center of a swirling controversy. Because some teacher somewhere just couldn't resist asking the students to do something idiotic like listing the good things about slavery. Or the proposed Texas history text that merely refers to enslaved human beings who were liable to be murdered should they resist their enslavement, as nothing more than workers. It was just last week we had the Cletus Republican in Georgia who wanted a restoration of Confederate Memorial Day as a memorial to individual liberty and states' rights. I remember saying at the time, whose individual liberty are we talking about? There was a survey done of high school kids. And it proved that the white wing is winning. I don't like to admit things like this, but yeah, the white wing's winning. Out of that survey, 8%, 8, not 18, not 28, not 80, 8, the number 8 all by itself, 8%, 8 out of 100, 8% of high school seniors only 8% of high school seniors agreed and got the answer right that slavery was the root cause of the Civil War. Only 44% knew that slavery was legal in every one of the English colonies in pre-revolutionary North America. Only 44% knew that slavery was legal in all of them. All the way up through the American Revolution. Less than half of those same high school seniors knew that it took a constitutional amendment to end slavery, and that in fact there is a constitutional amendment that does exactly that. And so if you view Kanye West's comments within the totality of their circumstances, they become far worse than they were when he said them, because they become a part of a concerted effort by the white wing in this country to steal from African Americans again. Freedom was their ancestors' freedom was there. Jesus, I'm so sorry. Freedom and liberty were stolen. Their labor was stolen. And having been made bereft of those things, and then the post-Civil War insurrection against provision of full constitutional liberties, the theft continued. We really haven't even gotten to the Klan. Jesus, Mike, the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pencilneck Geek, welcomed Joe Arpaio, a serial violator of civil and human rights, as a great American, and said he was proud to have him there with him a couple of days ago. That immediately caused me to wonder, well, God, I guess Mike Pence would have gladly stood by George Wallace in the schoolhouse door, or looked at Bull Connor and said, hey, can I turn loose one of the dogs? Ooh, 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 Bull, let me have one of the fire hoses, Bull. And so the fact of the matter is, I wanted to deal with this issue because it is more than simply an ignorant rich man saying the sorts of things that ignorant rich men seem to have a God-given right to say. With no consequences whatsoever. But I'd like to hope that Dr. Bill O'Brien would agree with me when I say history is real. History is verifiable. History is researchable. And beyond simply manifesting for anyone and everyone to see how utterly stupid he is, Kanye West is actually participating in a full-on assault against historical realities. And they're there. They're all over the place. I tweeted something earlier you might find interesting while we were waiting for the car to get done. I was looking at some of the interpretive signage. There's a Native American mound in South Charleston, West Virginia. And it's a beautiful and a stately thing. Of course, the Smithsonian Institution came in the early part of the 20th century, or the latter part of the 19th, and, you know, dug the hell out of it, and, you know, dug up the bodies that were buried in it. Bodies that had been there since somewhere between 100 and 500 BCE. And that whole river valley through there, along the banks of the Kanawha River, was dotted with mounds and old Native communities. One community down around St. Albans, West Virginia, dating back to 8,500 years BCE. Like, before anybody started pressing little reeds into wet clay in the land between the rivers Tigris and Euphrates to invent writing. They were successfully living, and quite happily, thank you very much, along the banks of the Kanawha River. But there was interpretive signage there to help people understand where all this falls in time. A timeline, if you will. And it noted that the early archaic period for what is euphemistically referred to as indigenous American prehistory goes back to 8500 BCE. It says BC on the timeline because that everybody understands that means before Christ. But that archaic camp was 8500 BCE. A little ways up, there's a dot. And it says Stonehenge. And somewhere around 900 BCE, there's another dot that says Sparta. At around, call it 520 BCE, there's another notation, fall of Babylon. Because see, the people who do this sort of work, like to provide some kind of context. And that's valuable and understandable. So we get to, about 520 BCE, fall of Babylon. And underneath, in a color code, the word Adena appears. The Adena culture in North American indigenous history. Long about, 200 BCE, there's another notation, Great Wall of China. Then you get to 1 AD, and there's another dot a little further to the right of 1 AD. Not 1 CE, which is the accepted terminology. Common era. Current era. And that dot says Jesus. Another dot a little ways on says Roman Colosseum. And from from Fall of Babylon to Roman Colosseum is the time during which the mound builders lived in the valley of the Great Kanawha River. And without going into too much detail, it was a brilliant culture. Had they run across the Spartans, given the effectiveness of the stone tools and weapons they had, they probably could have given the Spartans a damn good run for their money. But there it is, just a little bit to the right of 1 AD, Jesus. Now, as I observed talking to Agnes, we can effectively date Stonehenge. They effectively dated the St. Albans Archaic Camp at 8500 BCE. We can date Sparta, and we can prove that Sparta existed. We know that Babylon existed because there are historical documents that write about the fall of Babylon. The Chinese cultures were most specific about the construction of the big, beautiful wall that was absolutely useless, I might add. We know when Vespasian and his sons built the Flavian Amphitheater, which is what the Romans knew that we call the Colosseum. But right there, that little red dot that says Jesus, That is ahistorical. And just to prove that I'm not just rambling, that's ahistorical, the way that slavery as a choice is ahistorical. It is a claim without quantifiable substance. There is no historic Jesus. The Gospels are not biography. They are hagiography. Paul, who wrote the first books of the New Testament, never met him. Never laid eyes on him. Except in a hallucination. And there's no documentation. There's documentation for Plato, Socrates, Pericles. There's documentation for Epaminondas and Philip II of Macedon. The only thing we can say for sure about Yeshua bar Yusuf, well, that sure does sound like some terrorist names, don't it? The only thing we can say for sure about Yeshua bar Yusuf is that there were probably at that given time about 1,000 of them in Palestine. Because Yeshua and Yusuf were as common as John and Tom are today. And that is ahistorical. It is a reference without historical validity. But bless their hearts, they had to put him in there because the people looking at those signs said, fall of Babylon, huh? Roman Colosseum, ain't that where they murdered the Christians? And it's not a damn bit different from Kanye West saying that slavery was a choice. Now, to be fair, since we're talking about classical antiquity, the slavery of classical antiquity, in some instances, but not all of them, could, in fact, be a matter of choice. Well-educated Greek men, for instance, who often set up shop in Athens, in the Agora there, whatever, would sometimes sell themselves into slavery as the tutors of the wealthy elite of Rome. Because no Roman was considered fully educated unless they had their Greek. One of the great knocks on Pompeius Magnus, Pompey the Great, he was fair-skinned and blondish, red-haired, and he was referred to by the upper crust of Roman society as being Gaulish. Being of a barbarian ethnicity. And so to have one's Greek was in fact very important in that time, and for a variety of reasons, people would sell themselves into slavery, and then they'd buy their way back out because they were able to work and allowed to work and make money on the side. Now, this same thing does not apply to, say, Roman galley slaves. It doesn't apply to, say, slaves in the Spanish silver mines. You basically worked there till you died. Those were people captured in wars and whatnot. But there was an element of choice in the classical world. That element of choice did not exist in colonial and post-colonial America. If you were a slave, and your child was a slave, and a child was born, that child was born a slave, born in bondage. There's every reason in the world to think that if he would dig up his genealogy, although it is admittedly difficult to do, Kanye West would find his slave ancestors. And if ghosts were real, they would rise up from the dirt and slap him till the spit flew for saying that the hell of their lives was their choice. So hopefully maybe that's... I spent this much time on it because, again, history matters. And a country that forgets its history is liable to repeat the worst aspects of it, given the opportunity. We've had a lot of notes coming in. Steve in New York. Occam's Razor tells us that Kanye's just stupid. The notion that there's any real reason other than this just seems wrong. The stupid may be the only truly colorblind thing. In point of fact, says Steve, Kanye may be the black Milo Yiannopoulos. Terrace, meanwhile, says, exactly, Kanye now appeals to Trumpansies, too. Adidas's executives are white males who voted for dumpster and know every Hillary joke. Well, that's a possibility inside the United States, but it's a European corporation, after all, and, you know, they have some of the same problems that we have, because in many ways, our diseases have metastasized. Matt in San Francisco says, I'm worried. Please don't allow Kanye West to cause an aneurysm. I think I'm okay so far. If I didn't have one of those earlier today, I'm not likely to let... Kanye bother me that much, but it's the assault on history that has to be addressed. Bill in Allentown says, wasn't the area of Gaul either France or Germany of today? It was France, it was Belgium, part of the Netherlands. Germany was Germania, and the German tribes lived there, of whom the Gauls were scared to damn death. Caesar's Gallic Wars begins with a mass migration of Gauls trying to get away from some invading Germans. This from Jeff in Hellhole, Indiana. But Bob, they got free room and board and meals. They were happy back when America was great. And that's one of the scariest parts of this ahistoricism. The idea that that slavery can literally be whitewashed. The most important thing stolen from slaves, their names, and therefore their heritage and their history. I had the pleasure some several years back of meeting a man who had gone to great lengths to very carefully trace his lineage until he got back, until he got all the way, reversed the middle passage, and went and met relatives of his who live to this day in Ghana. and it was moving in the extreme. Today's science moment, courtesy of Scott and Punky. The jiffy is the amount of time light takes to travel one Fermi, about the size of a nucleon, in a vacuum. Planck time is the time light takes to travel one Planck length, P-L-A-N-C-K, named for Max Planck. Theoretically, this is the smallest time measurement that will ever be possible. Scientists need to rename the smallest unit of time to the Kanye, which suggests the minuscule unit of time that Kanye would last under slavery by choice or by chance. And we don't mean Chance the Rapper. But of course, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and there are more thorns. We've got a veritable pageant-winning bouquet of thorns. And we'll get to them in short order. We will. But for now, we'll take a break. And at almost exactly the halfway point in the program, I'll note that we need to raise $190. Because we need to raise $200 every evening, and if we do that, we get a week of fundraising free radio at the end of the month. We need to raise $100, or $190. And I hate to say it, but made the more so because of what happened today. But it would be great not to have to raise $390 tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch. If we could get that started, it would be helpful in the extreme. So have no fear of aneurysms. I think we're going to be okay, Matt. This is listener supported conversation radio. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Jingle the phone if you've got something you want to add to all of this. We'll be back.
Up the paper this morning and read all the daily blues. The world is one big tragedy. I wonder what I can do about all the pain and injustice, about all of the sorrow.
Tomorrow. It's Thursday, May 3, 2018.
With this latest reckless decision, the EPA did not just jeopardize our planet and our health, they also broke the law.
17 states sue Trump administration over rollback of car emissions standards.
This is a worst-case scenario for government ethics. I feel like I want my head to explode right now.
More new ethics problems for EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. Pakistan sets all-time world heat record for the month of April. Plus, Russia launches the world's first floating nuclear power plant.
Fantastic. What could possibly go wrong? All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We are killing our planet. Let us face it. There is no planet B.
Yes, there is. It's called Mars, and Elon Musk is going to fly us there, and we will all be eating Matt Damon's poop potatoes. Okay?
This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, Scott Pruitt used to brag about the fact that he had sued the EPA 14 different times. Well, I guess what comes around goes around.
Yes, it certainly does. A coalition of 17 states and the District of Columbia filed suit against the Trump Environmental Protection Agency on Tuesday, arguing that the administration's attempt to weaken Obama-era fuel economy and emissions standards for cars and trucks is against the law. The states, led by California, allege the rollback is arbitrary and unsupported by evidence and would increase health care costs and climate change impacts. In a press conference, California's Democratic Governor Jerry Brown was characteristically blunt.
He's breaking the law. He's flouting the Clean Air Act and the legitimate needs and well-being of the American people. This is about health. It's about life and death. Pruitt and I suppose his boss, Mr. Trump, they want people to buy more gas, create more pollution. Hard to believe, but that's the fact.
The 17 states represent 44% of U.S. car sales. Governor Brown and some auto industry analysts warn that weakening the standards could hamstring the U.S. auto industry because the rest of the world is transitioning to cleaner cars and trucks.
Which means they're going to be able to sell a lot more cars, and the U.S. auto industry is going to be caught out again.
More troubles for EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. Two of his top aides resigned this week related to Pruitt's questionable spending and ethics. Now, new reports reveal that Pruitt's exorbitantly costly trip to Morocco last year was actually organized by a lobbyist who was then subsequently hired by Morocco to lobby the U.S. government.
Nice.
Former federal ethics chief Walter Schaub told CNN,
"It's inconceivable in any other administration that he'd still be in this position, particularly because the whole point of the trip seems to have been to promote natural gas industry interests, and it's really not clear what an EPA administrator has to do with that."
Well, it depends if that EPA administrator is Scott Pruitt and has been funded for years by the fossil fuel industry.
And now the Washington Post reports that a billionaire who advised Trump on deregulation has himself received a special exemption from regulation. The EPA this week quietly granted billionaire Carl Icahn a special financial hardship waiver worth millions of dollars that exempts an oil refinery he owns from renewable fuel blending regulations. Icahn was forced to step down as a Trump advisor last year amid corruption allegations that he was using his position to benefit his investments.
Billionaire Carl Icahn got a hardship waiver
for a profitable refinery.
Poor guy.
Meanwhile, the impacts of global warming caused by burning fossil fuels continue to accelerate. Pakistan, on April 30th, hit 122 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, if confirmed, that would be a new world record for the hottest April temperature ever reliably recorded on the entire planet.
Wow.
But some good news for breathers. New York City this week announced plans to electrify electrify their entire bus fleet by 2040. Even better news, Shenzhen, China announced it has already converted its entire fleet of 13,000 buses to electric, and they did it in just 3 years. In Hawaii, a bipartisan unanimous vote in the state legislature made Hawaii the first state in the nation to commit to 100% renewable electricity and a statewide net zero carbon emissions economy by 2045.
Nice.
And finally, Russia has launched the world's first floating nuclear power plant, and it's headed on a very slow barge to the Arctic, where it will begin operations sometime next year. It's part of a planned fleet of floating nuke plants that Greenpeace warns could cause Chernobyl on ice.
Not as nice. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. We'll be off for the next week, but we'll be back thereafter. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, not a good bumper, Brad and Desi. Bad bumper. Bad. But just the same. 22 minutes before the hour, I have happy news. There's a challenge on the table courtesy of Bob in Texas. This is a big deal. A dollar-for-dollar challenge. Bob will match every dollar up to $100 that comes in between now and the end of the program. That means in the next hour and 22 minutes, if we can raise $100, Bob in Texas is willing to turn it into two. All we got to do is raise the 100, though. So let's cross our fingers. Got a note a moment ago from Ron in the, I presume, not frozen any longer north. I mean, it's probably all the way up to, like, you know, 40 or 50 degrees up there now. In regard to Kanye. Ron says, Kanye was narcissistic before he started hanging with the Kardashians. Spending time with them has done sucked all of the smarts right out of him. By the way, what the is the attraction of the Kardashian clan? If they didn't have money from the stupids, they would be living in a trailer park, running an unlicensed beauty shop. That's good. That's cowbell for the unlicensed beauty shop, Ron. That was special. Yes. And I'm sorry, I did the story the other night about the floating nuclear reactor. What are we going to call it? The MRS Chernobyl? No, it's got a different name. But we can think of them as the MRS Chernobyl, the MRS Fukushima, the MRS Three Mile Island, the MRS name of however many different Russian nuclear subs are at the bottom of the ocean. Oh. Great idea. MRS, Mother Russia ship. Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we'll get, in a minute, we'll get into the briar patch that is, yes, tonight's, like I said at the beginning of the program, you think you're going to talk about one thing, but you have to acknowledge the seamlessness of the news cycle now. Everything just flows one thing into the next. If I didn't do the Kanye story, it would have been completely subsumed by the time we got to Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. But let's run over and check in and see who's on the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, howdy.
Howdy.
This is... Oh, hang on. This stupid cell phone's ringing.
Happens. It's better than having the program going on in the background.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Got it. This is your buddy Matt from up in Humboldt County.
Oh, hey, Matt. How are you?
Hanging in there. And I think, I don't know this for certain, but I think this is the first time I've called in.
I think it might be. I mean, maybe we've talked off air.
Maybe. I know I've sent sent emails.
Yeah, I get your emails, yeah.
We've sent emails back and forth, but I think this is the first time I actually called into the program.
Well, congratulations. I sincerely doubt you will faint in the process, but I'm awfully tickled to be talking to you. And while we can't give away, we have a lot of other stuff to give away, you're welcome to a cowbell. So, you know, thanks.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm up here in Humboldt County, a town called Arcata, to be exact.
Yeah.
You remember Roger the gardener?
Yes, he's in the chat room even as we speak.
Okay, chip in on Friday on the front porch, and I haven't heard him for a good while. But at that time, he lived in a place called McKinleyville.
Right. If I'm not mistaken, and he can correct me in the chat room if I am, he has since decamped northward.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's about 20 minutes or 15 minutes north of where I live.
Okay.
McKinleyville is. Right. But anyway,
I remember talk of an oyster festival, and that was that recommended the region to me most highly.
Oh yeah. Oh gosh. The oyster festival is something else. I'll tell you.
I think I could probably embarrass myself there.
Yeah, you probably could. It's too bad you can't drink anymore, because we have about 6 different microbreweries.
Oh, within, be still my heart.
Within maybe a 50, 60 mile radius. There's about 6 of them, and they come up with some good stuff. There's one place called Redwood Curtain that makes an IPA that will knock your socks off.
I can imagine. I'm not the hugest fan of IPAs, because I like to taste the beer and not just the hops.
Then there's another one that makes, there's a couple of things. Steelhead, one's called Steelhead Pale Ale.
Which, that sounds nice.
Which is not, I don't think, is so hoppy. It's your basic pale ale, and then they make something called Jamaica Red.
Oh, kind of like a malty red stripe sort of take?
Yeah, except they put a little twist to it, and that stuff. I don't usually go and get beer, because I can't drink very much either, because of some medications.
But nectar of the gods just the same?
Yeah, absolutely. Nectar of the throat gods.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see, I used to brew. I mean, the reason I'm skeptical about highly hopped beers is I used to brew. And there's a lot of time and effort that goes into brewing.
Yeah.
And if you come up with one that just does, you know, you've aged it, and it's fermented in the fermenter and all of that, and it just doesn't taste like what you wanted it to be, I'm guilty of it. I put it back in the fermenter and do what's called dry hopping it. You've got some hops, flowers, the 7.5 gallon fermenter. You just throw in a big handful of hops and put the beer back on it and put the lid back on it and the bubbler and everything and set it back in the corner for a couple of more weeks. And by God, when you're done, you've got a hillbilly IPA.
There you go.
And it'll turn your mouth inside out.
Hey, there's an idea for raising money for the horn.
Oh, I don't think I could do that because the licensing is just way too brutal, and the shipping would be hell. But
and
you know, if you've been listening, you know that I've had recommended to me that I finally get off my duff, or perhaps onto it, and sit down and watch Breaking Bad.
Okay, yeah, I'm not really familiar with that.
No spoilers or anything, but
right.
So
I don't own a TV.
Right. There was one little moment, a passing moment in one of the episodes we watched last night, where one was made to think that perhaps someone was being fired upon, because there was a lot of pop, 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 pop. But there had been an earlier scene in which one of the characters was capping his homebrew.
Okay.
And he had been a little careless in his bottling, and it was actually a whole bunch of his beer
bottle
exploding.
Oh.
And so when that plot twist came around, unlike what I think people were supposed to think, I was like, his beer's exploding in the garage.
That reminds me of a story that my dad tells frequently about his youth. My folks grew up in Texas, so that would explain any southern accent that you might have picked up on. I grew up here. Right here in this town, in fact, but my folks both grew up in Texas. My dad grew up on the plains area of West Texas, not too far from Lubbock, and they were all farmers, all the families in his area. And my dad, as a teenager, had a really funky bunch of friends, some kind of troublemakers.
The fun, unsavory sort.
Well, not necessarily unsavory. I've met some of them, and they're, you know, they were just country boys trying to have some fun, you know. So they decided they were going to try to make some home brew, some moonshine. And so they got together. I don't know what all they put in it. My dad doesn't remember exactly, but I think they got some fruit, the different kinds, and maybe put some wheat in it, or I don't know what all. But anyway, they got their brew mixed up, and they set it to fermenting, and they hid it in the back of a barn where a bunch of the boys, there were about four brothers. This is my dad's friend, that his family, there were about four brothers, and they had their own farm, so they had a big barn. And so they mixed up their brew, and they then hid it in the far back corner of the barn so that it would and let it ferment. But what they failed to take into account was the speed at which that stuff ferments at high temperatures. And so they were doing this in the summertime, and there came along a heat wave where it got to be, you know, up in the hundreds. And then, of course, you're in the enclosed barn, and it's even hotter. And so one day they were out on the farm doing their chores and whatever, and they heard this boom. And they noticed part of the roof on that barn had been literally torn off. And their home brew was just spraying out. And it
damn. How much? I mean, God Almighty, what was it? 500 gallons?
I don't know how much they had it, but it just fermented so quick. But they blew the roof off the barn, and the dad of these four brothers was half nuts himself, and he came out. He heard the commotion. He came out and he said, "You boys don't know shit from shinola." And he actually thought it was kind of funny.
Ah, the colorfulness of Southern and Western speech. There's nothing quite like it, is there?
Yeah, you boys don't know shit from shinola.
Now, a long time back, before sort of home brewing became respectable, there was this stuff you could buy in the grocery store called Blue Ribbon Malt. And it was just malt syrup. It came in a little yellow can. And I knew people who would make homebrew with that and Fleischmann's bread yeast.
Okay.
Great God Almighty. And sometimes throw in a little sugar along the way.
There you go.
But you want to talk about awful. I mean,
stump liquor?
Yeah, very nearly. Very nearly stump liquor, exactly.
Uh-huh. Well, needless to say, these boys, their first aspirations of being shiners kind of went by the wayside. My dad, they had to work to fix the roof on the barn. They got tasked with that chore. So that was kind of the end of their shiner aspirations. But anyway,
I always wondered where the name for Shiner came from with the Shiner Brewery in Texas.
Oh yeah, that's something different. That is bad beer.
Oh no, I've had it. I think the Shiner Bock is kind of respectable.
Yeah, that the Shiner Bock's okay, but some of the other stuff.
Now, Lone Star, and I know this will probably engender a fight with the Texas contingent. Lone Star is one notch above Milwaukee's best.
Yeah, but it's definitely in the, you know, the Budweiser type category. Maybe a little bit above it. I've never actually had a Lone Star.
Well, I have, and I did, but it was after they were obtained by G. Heilemann Brewing of, I think, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
The same folks that brought us Old Style.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm sure it went downhill from there. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of miss... every once in a while, I'll take my chances and have me a cold brewski, but I have to be careful because I'm on some medications. But I got a bunch of stuff for bipolar, and you're really not supposed to drink when you take them.
It, right, yeah.
But every once in a while I'll indulge. But yeah, as far as the Oyster Festival goes, I haven't been in a number of years, but it's fun. They get a big crowd, and I'm a little claustrophobic, so I don't normally go down there because I have trouble with when I get into huge crowds of people. And I'm also blind, so I...
That could be a tough combination.
Yeah, blind and bipolar. Of course, I was born blind. The bipolar came late. I'd say I had a pretty hard time long about Inauguration Day last year. That kind of... And then after the election.
And I'm not trying to over...
Because I was... one thing I was worried about is like, you know, what's going to happen? They're going to, you know, change things so I can't pay for my meds? And then where would they be?
No, there's any... God knows there's a ton to worry about. I don't know if you're like me, but I haven't settled down, and I would imagine probably you haven't either, Matt.
Well, in some ways, you know, I have to. I've learned to kind of. I've learned to tune a lot of it out. I do try to. Just check things and, you know, keep myself up to date on what's going on and, you know, just to stay in the loop so I don't just totally drop out. But I learned that in order to keep my own sanity, I had to eventually just avoid getting deep into the sewage pit.
Well, that's probably healthy. Everybody needs some form of, dare I say it, escape.
Yeah.
Mine lately tends to be going hog wild, see what I did there, with the smoker on the weekends.
God, you make me so, your barbecue and Todd and Tracy with your barbecue. Oh, man, I get, God almighty, that's killing me, man.
Well, I mean, we call it food porn for a reason, Matt.
yeah, that's for sure.
And in fact, I ran through the door because I was, you know, so close for time getting home this evening.
Right,
and
getting your car fixed.
Yeah, I was going to stop and get a bite to eat because, I told the boss, I said, you know,
mm-hmm.
I should probably eat, or the next thing I know, you know, my blood sugar is going to be like, you know, 6 7/8.
Ooh, yeah. You're diabetic?
No, well, no, not quite, but all my life I've run hypoglycemic.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, unless I just graze constantly, my blood sugar will go through the floor.
Mm.
And it seems kind of odd that somebody who is not cranking out enough insulin would have that happen. So I'm real careful. I try to, you know, protein, carbs, you know, balance. But as soon as the program's over, I'm out. I'm through the studio door, and looking for a big plate of pulled pork.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Yeah, you've been talking about that for 3 days.
I know. I should shut up about it, but
that just makes me salivate.
It's a doggone fun, and
yeah, it is. I'll bet it is. I bet you know. You were. I remember you were talking about you know what it is, sort of the whole experience, some time back.
Yeah, it's not quite as much fun as it used to be, Matt. You know, when I'd have the zinc wash tub with a bunch of long necks stacked in it and a whole bunch of ice all over it all, and sprinkle some ice cream salt over it to make the ice get even colder, and you just sit there and you watch the temperature gauge, and every now and then you kind of every so often you apply a medicinal long neck or whatever.
There you go.
But it's still awfully engaging. And I think it's actually more fun to sit there and fuss with it than it is to, I mean, there's a gizmo out there you can buy that's almost like a fan from a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little unit with a processor in it that will control the speed of the fan based on the temperature data coming from the probe. And it'll sit there and hold that. It'll sit there and hold that smoker exactly at temperature.
Yeah.
But and so you can just walk away. Yeah. But if you walk away, where's the fun?
Yeah, you don't need that shit. All that high tech. Yeah, I mean, what you were describing. I don't even remember when it was, but you were describing it, you know, the whole process of being out there and you know, paying attention to it and kind of once in a while chunking in a little more wood and then kind of watching the gauges and all of that, and it being kind of a zen activity.
Yeah, and if this summer if the planets align and I get that that propane griddle and get to start doing like outdoor Japanese steakhouse teppanyaki stuff with the fried rice and the vegetables and I'll be unbearable then, Matt.
Oh man, yeah, boy, yeah. Just on another note, and I just tuned in. I normally don't listen live. I get it the program as a podcast. So I only occasionally listen live, and so I had just tuned in a little bit ago. But something came to mind. You know, the other night you were talking about the Peace and Justice Center in Alabama.
Yes, the lynching memorial.
The lynching memorial, yeah. And I sent you an email last night about a recent lynching.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. And then after I sent that to you, I realized I had neglected to mention another lynching that took place. It was some time back, maybe 10 years ago, but a gentleman by the name of Matthew Shepard.
Yep. Crucified on a barbed wire fence in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this stuff is real. And, you know, whoever those whoever those jug heads were that were saying all this, it's all over, it won't happen again, we just need to get past it. Wrong.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, you've got to know your history so that history can serve its purpose and teach us not to do it again.
Right.
Dr. Bill was talking about that very thing on air just yesterday. You know, that history isn't just some esoteric parlor game, that it serves a deep and abiding social purpose. And a lot of people, a lot of people tend to. Now, there were a lot of lynchings that did involve ropes, but a rope is not a sine qua non to a lynching.
Right. That's kind of what I was trying to point out.
Your point being that Heather Heyer in August 2017 was the victim of a lynching perpetrated through the use of an automobile.
Right. And the reason for it.
Yeah. She was standing up to fascist Klansmen and neo-Nazis.
Yeah. And if that ain't a lynching, I don't know what is.
Well, you can make the same argument with regard to Viola Liuzzo, who was murdered in a county adjoining Dallas County in Alabama. During the civil rights struggle, the Klansmen pulled up beside her car and shot them all, or shot into the car.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not familiar with that one. I had listened to that program. Whenever it was Monday night, and that was the first thing that popped into my head.
Well, and your suggestion that she needs to be, her name needs to be included in the record of those lynched.
Mm-hmm.
If race was a motivating factor and murder was the outcome, it seems fairly clear.
Yeah. And so I guess there could be that might be a little bit unclear as to whether her name should be on that memorial.
I would be interested to know if Viola Liuzzo's name is at the memorial.
Yeah.
And I would imagine somewhere online one can probably go and find it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if the... Because the names are recorded.
Right. I wonder how you.
I don't see it. I don't see it off the top of the
Viola Liuzzo.
Well, no. I mean, I'm just looking for a list of names.
Okay.
And there's so many news stories about the opening of the museum.
Right.
I don't necessarily see it. But it's worth. It's worth looking for.
And I wonder if there is a way of communicate with whoever is.
Well, they're bound to have a website, and there would be a contact I presume. There.
Right. It's Alabama.
You know, Emmett Till, to whom Bill Cosby's wife analogized Bill Cosby's situation. That was obviously a lynching.
Yeah.
But then you get the people who misappropriate.
Did Bill Cosby's wife attribute say that Bill Cosby's situation is similar to Emmett Till?
Yes, yes, yes.
What the fuck?
Yeah, she did.
I mean, what the fucking fuck?
You know what? And you could just probably keep appending fucks to it, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, and I really.
But you gotta understand that word gets trotted out and misappropriated. And there's there are historical
Clarence
examples.
Thomas.
Clarence Thomas, a high tech lynching.
Lynching, yeah. Yep.
And of course, nothing that happened to Clarence Thomas was even remotely, vaguely similar.
No.
But the right wing's like that. And Matt, the reason for that is because they have and are steeped in a persecution complex. I mean, for instance, there's no doubt that Christianity is the dominant religion in the United States of America. I think, what, maybe 20%, maybe a little north
right.
of 20% are atheists, free thinkers, and non-believers, but religious
right.
people are 80%, and of that 80%, what, 72, 75% are some sort of professing Christian, right?
Yeah.
And yet, if you're talking to the Southern Baptists and some Methodists, if you're talking to the Pentecostals, you can tune into Jim Baker any given day and hear the same
God.
Thing that... Or Brian Fisher or Dobson or
yeah, I listen,
any
heard,
of those freaks.
I heard,
and they will tell
I heard
you.
Brian.
They will tell you that Christians are oppressed in this country, and the whole reason, for instance, that Mike Pence in Talibandiana signed that gay hatred bill into law a few years ago, that religious liberty bill,
mm-hmm.
was
yeah.
because of that paranoid fantasy that the Christian majority in this country is somehow persecuted. Like, you know, the us 20 percenters are just sitting around
yeah.
with a pride of lions in our basement, just waiting for the unsuspecting Christian to come by so we can
yeah.
turn loose the lions.
Right. Did he I wonder if he compared the Christian majority in their situation to the black people during apartheid South Africa.
Well, Dennis Prager kind of got close to that in last night's program, talking about how people have to come up and whisper to him, I'm a conservative and I support Trump, but don't tell anybody.
Right, yeah. See, I don't listen to any of that shit.
No, that's why I play it on the program, so that we can know what the freaks are up to.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you taking one for the team, you and Todd.
Well, Todd's the one that's up watching Washington Journal every morning. I mean,
oh God,
there's got to be a medal or something.
I wonder if does he have high blood pressure? I wonder.
I would hope not, because you watch Washington Journal every morning. You're not going to be okay.
No.
I don't understand. It just won't give Trump a chance. Just give him a chance.
Todd does that so much better than me.
Yeah. I couldn't do that. Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, what a... Oh, Lord. Yeah, it's really something. Well, I probably better clear the lines here to see if anybody else wants to jump in.
Well, I'm awful glad that you called in, because, You are always welcome here, even, well, on those evenings when you decide to listen live.
Okay. We'll keep that in mind. I need to get, I wish I could get in on Friday on the front porch sometime, but I don't have the Skype on the computer.
Well, it's been my experience. Yeah. You might recall that Kevin in Colorado Springs is visually impaired.
Right.
And he has said that Skype is an absolute paperweight when it comes to...
That's been my experience.
Yeah.
That's been my experience when you're trying to use it with a screen reader.
That would have to be just pure madness.
Yeah. That's been my experience. So, and I've really been wishing that it wasn't, because wishing I could get in on that. Because, man, last Friday, I tell you, that was a Friday on the front porch for the ages.
Wasn't that a dandy? And it started out kind of low key, kind of, and then just boom,
we were off to the races. Well. And it was kind of neat that I really appreciated that you kind of consciously tried to stay out of the Trump gossip. That was good. I didn't really get into that too much. And then the top of it all was, oh, whoever it was going to have a colonoscopy. And he had the prep.
Oh, that was Trey in Kentucky, Stan, I think.
Okay, yeah, maybe I forget who it was, but anyway, he had the bottle of prep medication, and he was asking, I guess it was his first time. He's asking what was going to happen, what this is going to do. Steve from Georgistan said, "You're going to see a piece of bubble gum from 1982."
That destroyed me, Matt. It absolutely. I had to mute the mic.
Laughing. I was laughing till my sides hurt, man.
It was devastating. It was.
And.
And Steve from Georgia stands good for that kind of stuff. You're just talking along, chatting, and then whack, right upside the head. You know,
he'll pop off with a big, good zinger.
And that one hurt.
Oh, man. Oh, Lord have mercy. That was something else. That whole program was.
Well, look, if I can ever have any luck getting the cell phone stress line gizmo working again, then you can just dial into that, and participate in the front porch that way. But for some reason or another, it does not like this setup. But I go back and tinker with it every now and then.
Well, maybe, what's his name, Fab? Maybe you could see if he could help you out with that.
Well, it's not an equipment issue. It's just a tech issue, and I haven't solved it. But maybe I will at some point. The other side of that coin is, you know, someday we'll get a, maybe, you know, hit the lottery or something and get a new highfalutin phone hybrid in here and bring four lines on board so we can have all kinds of people phoning into Friday on the front porch. And that's the way it originally started, in fact.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then it got fried by a lightning storm, if I remember correctly.
Well, it got fried because the fine folks at Frontier Communications had screwed up the outside ground. And so the lightning ran on the phone line straight into the $3,000 telephone gizmo box, and zzz.
Yeah, okay, that's what it was. Yeah, So, but I'll leave you with one more thing. And I've been meaning to bring this up for a while. I don't know when it was, but I've been listening to you, to the horn now, going on 2 years, since probably about March or April of 2016. So I've been hanging around here for a long time.
Yeah, that is it. That's a right smart bit.
Yeah, and but anyway, actually I got a couple things. I got to let you know, and you probably already noticed this, I needed to take a powder on my Patreon payment for this month.
Right, and I understand. I mean, people, it's hard out there. It absolutely is.
That's why I get a little bit. I mean, I know what you're doing, and it's kind of fun when you do the reverb with economic anxiety.
No, there's economic anxiety, the real kind, and then there's the cheap ploy that Trumpansies employ to keep from admitting that, you know, they're just Nazis.
Yeah. But anyway, there was a conversation about who would be a nominee for the liberal redneck of the Horn congregation. Who would be the official liberal redneck? And Charlie from Tennessee, was nominated, and that's certainly a good choice, but I, especially after Friday's performance, I would like to.
You're nominating Steve, aren't you?
Yes.
Sadly, he's not in the chat room this evening, but I will convey that to him, Matt. And you just got a note from a fellow Californian, our buddy Tom in the Bay Area, just wrote in and said, subject line, Matt's call. Great call from Matt. I also loved Friday's program. I will always think of Steve henceforward as Steve from Bubblegum Stan in the future.
Okay,
so you were not the only one who was knocked down by that.
Yeah, I don't think.
And what made it so magnificent was the fact that it is absolutely true.
I'll be turning 45 next month.
You know, you look in there and you go, son of a gun, there's those keys to that old Camaro.
I'm still a little young to need to do that particular.
Well, you know, one of the nice things about being uninsured procedure is you don't ever have to worry about having another colonoscopy.
Yeah. Well, I am insured. I've got Medicare and Medi-Cal.
Well, you hit 50, Matt, and it'll be time to have the conversation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, and they'll say, you know, there's a script. They'll say things to you like, listen, you won't even be awake for this, and the prep is far worse than the actual procedure. And for the most part, that's true.
That's what I understand from other people.
Except for the fact that you're actually awake enough to answer questions and take directions.
Mm-hmm.
Only you can't remember it.
Right.
And for me, at least, and I've had like four of them.
Yeah.
That's always the disturbing part.
Mm-hmm.
It's like knowing that you were interrogated in a prison camp, But not being able to remember if you actually gave up the, if you actually told them where you'd hidden the microfilm. And if you hid it there, it's pretty sure they found it.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. My dad went through that a couple weeks ago when he had eye surgery. They gave him something like that. He was only out for about 5 or 10 minutes, but I think it was, from what he was telling me, it sounded like something similar to that. But yeah, I definitely nominate Steve for the. So you may have to. They may have. Steve and Charlie may have to duke it out.
Oh, no, not a, I don't know. We may have to have a neck off.
There you go.
We'll see. I don't know. We'll see who can talk about health problems in a cranky cranky redneck voice.
There you go.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, your observations have engendered some comments. Got a note from Albert in Rhode Island. And Albert says, Bob, I was born and raised in Texas 57 years ago. There's only one way you can get me to drink a Lone Star. All caps. At gunpoint. Shiner Bock is okay. So's the Shiner Blonde. The Shiner Grapefruit beer is as bad as Lone Star. And then Albert goes on to add, that fan unit gizmo you're talking about on the smoker is a thermostatic-controlled bellows. The temperature probe is in the smoking cabinet. It helps you precisely control the temperature in the smoking cabinet, and it's mainly used when you're smoking a large amount of meat, like 20 to 50 pounds. Yeah, that's about me. When I'm doing butts. But again, kind of defeats the fun of it. I mean, look, I'm a hardcore. It was New Year's Day and 10 below zero or something outside. And I was bundling up and going out and tending a full, and you know, as a
ribs.
As a Texan, what? You'll appreciate this. It was a brisket, because you know, New Year's Day, corned beef and cabbage.
That's right.
And that was painful.
I remember that.
But got it done, and
you
and
did
I'm
it anyway.
I'm pretty satisfied with my brisket methodology.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really satisfied with the way I've worked the ribs, and I'm quite happy.
Yeah.
I mean, not a lot of complaints. I'd say, if anything, the one item, oddly enough, that is not completely to my satisfaction yet, is the beer can chicken on the Acorn.
Right.
But you know, chicken's the universal meat. You ever had rattlesnake?
Right.
Yep, tastes like chicken. You ever had woodchuck?
Uh-huh.
Yep, tastes like chicken. I had some tarantula the other day. What'd it taste like? Chicken.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, doing chicken on a barbecue of any kind is kind of it can be kind of fickle sometimes. It's a little more tricky than some other things, but I better scoot.
Well, it's been an absolute delight talking to you, and like I said, if I get the gizmo up and running, I'll shoot you a note, and you can participate in Friday on the front porch that way.
All right, and maybe you can send out a request on the social media or whatever, see if there's anybody out there that might have any ideas for you about how to.
Well, it's not that great a unit, but it's mainly it's mainly a matter of trying to tweak the EQ on. See, now we're off in the weeds talking about night baseball,
right,
but it's a matter of tweaking the EQ and the mix minus on it. And
trying to figure out settings on devices.
Yeah, because I've engineered calls on the fly with it to no avail. And part of it's the fact that it operates by Bluetooth.
Oh, yeah.
And Bluetooth is just kind of horrible. Like, if you use Bluetooth for headphones or something like that, you lose a lot of the fidelity of the recording. First of all, in the MP3 compression. And then secondly, you lose it in the translation into a Bluetooth transmittable signal.
Okay, I see. Well, you know, keep working on it. Maybe if you do happen to find the magic button or whatever it is, probably the best thing to do would be just to say so on air.
Oh, I will.
That way everybody'll.
Right, but you and a couple other people would be particularly interested in that. So.
Right.
In my life of indolent boredom, I'll try to find some time to get to tinker with that some more. Matt, it's been a delightful conversation. Your first. I hope it will not be your last.
I hope not either. Well, we'll check you next time.
All right, you take care. Holler anytime.
Okay.
Later now.
You bet.
Bye.
Later.
That's our buddy, and we have corresponded quite a bit. That's Matt up in Humboldt. And I'll try to make a point. I'll have to rehabilitate an old cell phone and go and get some minutes on it or something, and then see what we can make happen that way. It is 27 minutes before the hour. And Bob in Texas's challenge remains on the table and remains unanswered. So it would be great if we did not let that blow past. And again, I apologize for the fundraising. I wish there was some other way to do this. But I also suspect that if we had a bunch of ads for nutritional supplements and Swedish mattresses and Bose Wave radios and Lumber Liquidators floors and steel buildings and all that the bullshit that usually gets advertised on terrestrial radio, there would probably be a riot. So let me just say that it would be extremely helpful if we could finish the first week of the month of May okay for for daily fundraising. And go ahead and meet that matching challenge tonight so that won't be left laying on the table. And then we've only got $200 to worry about tomorrow night. So I'll cross my fingers between now and the next 26 minutes and see, hopefully be able to announce at the end of the program that the challenge has been met. Our buddy Smitty was trying to remember what Shinola is. You don't know shit from Shinola. That's exactly right, Smitty. It was a brand of shoe polish. And thus, to not be able to know the difference between feces and shoe polish kind of indicates that the person who lacks that much sense might very well be caught polishing his shoes with, poop. And by the way, I'm going to the phones in a minute, but I got a poop story. Let's go ahead. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Let's go ahead and drive the program on into the gutter. Because damn. I mean, damn. So they had a little problem. I'll bet Kim and Malin have already heard about this one. And our other members of the New Jersey Horn contingent. They had a little problem over at Holmdel High School in the Kenilworth School District in New Jersey. And the problem was that they'd show up for school every day, and out on the track, are we safe? Well, okay, we're not safe on the West Coast. I'm screwing up somebody's dinner. But on the track that runs around the football field, they would inevitably find, day after day after day, a pile of human poop
Somebody was taking a dump on the track every day. And after a while, it became obvious to the officials there that these were not random acts of defecation. And so they decided that some surveillance would be in order. Enter Thomas Tramaglini. Thomas Tramaglini. He's 42 years old. And according to the report from NJ.com, he lives about 3 miles from Holmdel High School over in the nearby community of Aberdeen, New Jersey. And before he was arrested, he was running on the track at the Holmdel High School at about 10 minutes till 6 in the morning. And that's when they caught him dropping a steamer. This, according to Sergeant Theodore Sigismondi. The track coaches were just tired of the situation. So who's Thomas Tramaglini, aged 42, of Aberdeen, New Jersey? Some guy that lives under the bridge and maybe doesn't have access to proper sanitary facilities? No. Some guy who has physical issues of an incontinent nature? No. Thomas Tramaglini is the superintendent of the Kenilworth Schools, which apparently includes Holmdel High School. Again, he's 42 years old. He was hired a couple of years back to be the school superintendent. He has now been charged with lewdness and littering. You know, holy cow, this comes out of Monmouth County, New Jersey. And as the superintendent of the Kenilworth School District, he pulls down a cool $147,504 per year. He's worked in Plumstead and Freehold Borough before coming to Kenilworth. He's been a part-time lecturer at Rutgers. And when reporters went to his door, nobody answered it. Okay, I'll go ahead and say it. I bet I know how he votes! That was probably wrong of me, wasn't it? But sorry. Yeah. Awesome. $15 of Bob's challenge has been met. And if we take Paul's 10 and add to that, that means we've got $75 to go. $75 to go to meet Bob's challenge. From Texas. So thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very, very kindly. Is that apropos of anything, that story, or was that just pure prurience? Yeah. I think it probably says a little bit about
the way that we lionize officialdom? I mean, can you imagine the looks on the track coach's face when he realized that his butt bandit was the guy who had the power to hire and fire him? Is there, well, if I brought this up tomorrow, we could have asked Billable Rick, you know, is there a defense on the track? And it, there's so many awful. But Jesus. And that goes hand in hand. Anybody who works in or around retail, like in stores, clothing, things like that, can tell you horror stories. Not just about restrooms, but about dressing rooms, or about that little empty space in the middle of the circular clothing racks. Some odd folks out there. Potty trained at gunpoint? I don't know. Whew. And of course, then there's always the health risk involved too. So, you know, we've got that. Let's run down and check in Tennistan. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. This is Charlie.
Hey, Charlie, you got conjured.
I'm sorry?
You got conjured.
Yeah.
Matt was talking about you.
Yeah. You know, you were talking earlier about people that, one of the people saying that we just need to give Trump a chance. I think Trump's had a lot of chances. I mean, the guy's pathetic. You know, I'm not too sure that he doesn't, if he'd stop up his phone and quit tweeting, you know, the economy in this country might pick up. But every time that guy gets on his phone, you start sending out these bogus tweets, the stock market starts going down. And I'm just wondering if some of his friends aren't shorting stock. And Donald Trump says, hey, I'm gonna tweet this out today. You can go ahead and short these stocks and make a fortune. You know, I can't believe that people even would think that Trump hasn't been given a chance. He's been given more than a chance. I mean, the man's crazy as a road lizard. And people keep giving him chances, and he keeps screwing up.
Now, wait a minute. You distorted there for a minute, Charlie. Did you say he's crazy as a road lizard?
As a road lizard, yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. Yep, that goes in the book. Yep. But he is, and the thing is, there's a bit of a couple of things I've been meaning to mention. For people who use iPhones, there's this weird thing that goes on, and I saw it in conjunction with some people that I've been, that I converse with off air. For some reason, iPhones randomly capitalize things now, for no rhyme or reason whatsoever. And so that could be, not that I want to give him a break or anything, but that could explain some of the bizarreness of the capitalizations in Trump's tweets. But the other problem, Charlie, is that all of Trump's tweets are not tweeted by Trump. For instance, this morning, Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, was on the air when Trump's tweet storm came down all about the payoff for Stormy, and it was over like three tweets with dot 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 at the end. And the first thing Michael Avenatti said is, I can tell you right now, Donald Trump did not type those tweets. There's too many commas in those run-on sentences. That's lawyer talk. And we know that Dan Scavino does some of his tweeting for him. But the real madcap shit, yeah, that's coming from his deeply damaged brain.
you know, a lot of these people that depend on, you know, investments and all to have enough money to retire. If Trump or whoever keeps going, they're not going to have enough money to retire ever. I mean, the stock market's going along pretty good, and all of a sudden all these tweets start, and the bottom just drops out of it.
Oh, you know, it's the market, for God's sakes. And we have to remember that anytime somebody loses, somebody else wins.
So if the
market goes to shit, there'll be somebody out there making money shorting this or shorting that.
Yeah.
But the other part of it is, the market being the market. Hell, that thing could crash, over. Seemingly insignificant stuff, like Trump threatening nuclear war, or threatening to maybe blow up Iran. You know, it seems like every time the gasoline prices stabilize a little bit, son of a gun, if he doesn't come out, or Bibi Netanyahu comes out with a picture of a bomb, and whoop, up go the gas prices again, because somebody's out there betting the futures that, it's going to be more expensive now because we might be in war.
And, you know, that's another thing that blows my mind. I'll change the subject here, but, you know, people that have been through something like the Holocaust in Europe back in the 30s and 40s, and then they treat the Palestinians the way they treat them, I can't understand it. That just blows my mind.
Well, it in many ways it defies comprehension. So, you know, don't feel bad.
I mean, you know, when millions get murdered in Europe, and then all of a sudden, you know, you create what you call a homeland, and the people that are living there, you treat them the same way as that the Nazis in Europe treated you. I mean, it just, I can't understand that. I really cannot understand that. It just, I don't know. Maybe I'm stupid. I don't know.
Well, I don't think you are. I think you've got a fully functioning conscience, and your conscience is shocked by the news you see coming out of there.
I mean, we're all humans. We're all the same. And I can't imagine, you know, that going on. But, yeah, and it's kind of like the racism here in the United States, you know. And what bothers me is a lot of these people that say, well, there is no racism in the United States anymore.
Well, and those people are either drunk or stupid or both.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you know, you were talking about on your show, I guess it's been probably months ago, about Sally Hemings and who was the president?
Jefferson.
Yeah, Jefferson.
Well, I mentioned him again last night, but.
Oh, did you? I wasn't listening last night. You know, if what I can't understand is, you know, if I think she had a few of his children, didn't she?
Yes.
And, you know, if you have that kind of relationship with a woman, I mean, a normal human, you know, would go up to the people that are racist and say, you know, I'm going to marry this woman, and you can take it and stick it if you don't like it, you know.
Not in 18th century America. That would have got him killed.
Well,
in a place like Virginia.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, it was one thing for old Marsh to go down to the quarters, because, you know, nobody could say no, because he could just have him killed.
Yeah.
That's why when I refer to the relationship between Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, I say
that he raped her repeatedly. Because even if she ostensibly consented, she consented from the status of a slave.
Well,
that's even if she did consent. And remember, she was the half-sister of Jefferson's dead wife, Martha.
Yeah, I knew that.
Because Martha's daddy had been going down to the quarters, too.
But, you know, I mean, it's just, I can't, you know, I guess I just can't understand that, why, you know, if a man and a woman are having sex, and they've had sex that many times, and produced that many children, they probably had feelings for one another.
Well, or he had feelings for, you know, because it was all surreptitious and done in the dark. Remember, he built her own separate quarters, but he didn't give her any windows.
Right. And from what I remember, it was a very small room.
Well, it was small enough that it was later turned into a men's restroom for Monticello. But let's remember,
I mean,
you know, his children by her. And see, this is one of the fundamental contradictions and hypocrisies of Jefferson. Jefferson writes all that high-toned language about all men created equal and mumbled a little bit about needing to end slavery when he was a very young man writing the Declaration of Independence. But as soon as he gets down to housekeeping at Monticello, he realizes if he doesn't have slavery, he doesn't make any money at all, because all he knew how to do was sit around and think. He couldn't do anything. So, on the one hand, you've got George Washington, who, upon his death at least, freed his slaves. Thomas Jefferson did not do that. And among other things, that means that the children Sally Hemings had by him, and again, we go back to Kanye and Choice, the children that Sally Hemings had by Thomas Jefferson were half white, but they were 100% slave.
Yeah, I guess I just, you know, I'm glad I wasn't alive back then, because, you know, none of what you're saying right now makes any sense.
Well, I mean, I'm not arguing it as something that it's crazy to me too. But it's also factual.
Yeah, I realize that, and that's just something I.
His descendants by Sally Hemings probably did not taste freedom. I don't know this for a fact, but until 1865.
Yeah.
And that's four score and 7 years later. Not quite, but you get the idea.
But I don't know. That's just, you know, whenever I first heard about that and started researching it and all, it just made no sense at all to me. Well, I guess, you know, back whenever I was living in Kentucky, I was going to church up there. I was, you know, trying to do what was right and go to church. And one of the deacons was a black man, and his wife was white. And there was another guy up there. His wife was racially mixed, and they got along just fine, you know. And, you know, I guess, I don't know. And one of the guys that was on the basketball team married one of the cheerleaders at the high school I went to, and he was white and she was black. So, as a matter of fact, the people that lived right across from my parents, their granddaughter was white and she married a black man. And, you know, I've seen it work. You know, it will work if you just let people alone. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. And if you don't bring all the baggage into it.
Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but I don't know.
I don't think you are.
So, anyway, I'll get off here and let somebody else talk.
All right, you take care, Charlie.
Okay.
Bye
you.
Now. Bye. That's our buddy Charlie in Tennessee. A couple of things. Lee in New York said, I thought Thomas Jefferson's will gave freedom to his slaves. The problem was that he died in debt and the slaves were sold to settle the debt. Well, I just went to the Monticello website and they said, during his lifetime, Jefferson freed 2 enslaved men. At his death, Jefferson bequeathed freedom to 5 men in his will. At least 3 other slaves were unofficially freed when Beverly Hemings, Harriet Hemings, and James Hemings were allowed to leave Monticello without pursuit. But that really doesn't. That doesn't change the fact that over the course of his life, Jefferson enslaved 600 human beings. 400 of them at Monticello, 200 of them on his other properties. At any given time, according to the Monticello site, around 130 people were enslaved at Monticello, and of those, 5, 6, 7, 8 may have gotten their freedom. And this, by the way, in regard to colonoscopies, a note from Kitty in Boston. Regarding the dreaded colonoscopy, folks need to know that they don't necessarily have to have them anymore if there's no relevant personal or family history of cancer or polyps. Cologuard is a relatively new home test. It's been advertised on TV. I've seen it. There's a little animated walking colon involved in it. I kid you not. Kitty says, my doc arranged for me to receive the test, and it was super easy. No prep whatsoever. Insurance paid for it, too. You won't find the keys to your old Camaro, but you will keep your dignity. Thank you. Thank you, Kitty. That is helpful. Following up, Lee says, thanks for the correction. I don't necessarily know it was a correction, but Thomas Jefferson's life is a great big ball of contradictions. And so we find ourselves at the end of the program. I'll give our buddy Reverbo the last word in regard to Kanye West. Reverbo says, Kanye is just enough of a chump to get recruited into the White Wing as their important black spokesman. What an ass. Well, indeed. And, you know, you might have your Ben Carson or your, what did Sarah Palin call him? Herb Kane. But Kanye is a wealthy and influential rapper. And they didn't really have one of those until Kanye decided to eliminate, a few hundred years of bond servitude. So I'm sure it'll be good for sales, and you know, he's going to keep cashing the checks from Adidas. Probably pretty good to be Kanye. And so we close the program with $75 to go to match Bob in Texas's challenge. Hopefully that will happen. And we won't have $375 to raise tomorrow. But thank you to all of you for tuning in this evening. I didn't think I was going to be on the air, but I managed to get back in time. And thank you for all the time that you spend sharing your precious finite time circling this this star on this little blue-green marble. Engaging in this conversation. Thank you for your emails, your tweets, your Facebook posts, your calls, your chat room participation. Thank you for all of it. Thank you for all you do to keep the program on the air. This program does not happen without you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you this evening to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.